Welcome to the Real Estate Mindset Podcast, hosted by Eric Nelson and brought to you by Wild Oak Capital. Eric is a real estate investor, business owner, and performance coach. Throughout this series, Eric explores the mindset behind why certain investors are so successful and how we can learn from their achievements and failures. Eric asks the tough questions around the habits, discipline, mindset, and more required to achieve the most ambitious goals. Thank you for being here and enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Real Estate Mindset. This is your host, Eric Nelson, and today's guests, Colin and Josh, are awesome. They have a lot of cool strategies that they've implemented in their real estate business. And it's really cool to hear because they've bought a few things with no money down. And this always gets talked about, right? In real estate communities, talk about, well, how can I buy real estate with none of my own money? But what they've been able to do without any really down payments has been pretty incredible. You know, obviously it takes some money to get started, but, and we talk about reserves and stuff, but ultimately they're buying stuff with no money down, which is a really powerful tool. And I give some caveats. We give some, you know, kind of things about risk around there, but really, really cool episode. I mean, they've kind of implemented a lot of strategies. So without further ado, I will bring in Colin and Josh. All right, Josh and Colin, thank you guys both for being here. I'm excited to dive in. So thanks for your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Okay, cool. So the way that I always start these shows is get a little background, right? Like we'll just kind of go by my screen here. So Josh, I'll ask you first, if you can kind of give us your history. I know you guys are both nurses. I'm excited to hear about that. We have some questions around that, but maybe just give us a background where you came from, what you're doing now, and then sort of what led you to real estate. So Josh, I'll let you go first.
Yeah. So you mentioned I'm a nurse. I went back to school to get my master's in anesthesia. So I'm a CRNA now, nurse anesthetist, nurse anesthesiologist. There's a lot of different terminology and there's a little bit of politics surrounded by that as well. But my background is nursing and now I do anesthesia. Met Colin when he married my sister and we were introduced to some real estate podcasts and started listening to that 4 or 5 years ago. And there's a lot of great stories on there and I wanted to be a part of it. So after saving up a little bit of money, me and Colin talked a little bit and realized that if we put our money together back in 2020, we could buy something. I didn't quite have enough to buy something on my own, but we figured we'd partner up and get in the game as soon as possible. That's kind of my story, Colin.
Yeah. So I did a ER nursing for about 10 or 11 years. I haven't actually been working as a nurse since the end of 2021. Since then, I've gotten into property management in Los Angeles. And then I also manage our portfolio, which we own together. We own all our stuff in Wisconsin. So his sister, my wife and I run the property management for our real estate business. And then also for the building we live in Los Angeles. But yeah, we got into real estate. I would actually credit Josh's parents because they were doing some small single family rentals in Wisconsin. And that's kind of what got me thinking about it. And then, like he said, just diving into bigger pockets and just kind of getting more and more motivated until we finally got our first deal. And I think it was May of 2020 that we closed our first deal, single family home. So
nice. Okay. So I see the surfboards behind you. You mentioned you're in LA. Josh, and where are you located?
I live just a few minutes outside of Green Bay. I can almost see Lambo from my window.
Oh, man, you need to go up. You need to start building up so you can see Lambo, right?
Yeah. Only two-story. Yeah, build it higher, right?
There you go. Well, cool. I mean, this is awesome. So I lots of questions. I mean, first of all, probably like we'll go back a little bit and say first deal. I mean, I think a lot of like if I listen to podcasts, like I remember listening to Bigger Pockets, I'm like, how do people do it? How do they like save up the money? I love that you guys said, you know, you put your money together. I think that's super powerful is partnerships, right? So maybe walk us through the first deal, how you found it, how you funded it, and then we can kind of fast forward a little bit because you guys are doing mobile home stuff now, right? But we'll just maybe talk about how'd you put the money together and then what you're up to now.
So, all right. Yeah, I'll take that one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so it was kind of organic. Colin said that he got his inspiration from my parents. They were doing like the traditional, like buy a really cheap single family house and, you know, and put it on a 10-year loan. And then in 10 years, it's strict cash flow. That was kind of my thought when I first kind of thought about doing some investing. It seemed really simple and really easy to understand. But I started doing anesthesia about 5 years ago. So I started saving up slowly and I had about 30 grand saved up ready to put somewhere. And then I started looking around and realized that really wasn't enough to buy something and then still have enough to renovate. And me and Colin, we had been talking kind of back and forth about buying something. And then I don't remember when it was, but at some point we're like, well, like if we put our money together, we have double, and then we have enough to buy something. And in some of these small towns in Wisconsin, you can buy something for pretty cheap. So we actually bought our first house for, how much was it, Colin? $35,000, I believe.
Yeah, it was listed at 32, and the realtor we spoke to said he thought it was going to be, there were going to be a decent amount of offers on it. So we ended up offering 35 and bought it for 35 cash.
Yeah. Oh, cash. Okay, cool. Yeah. So do you guys own that outright now, and is it still rented?
We did a BRRRR. So back in 2018, 19, when we were listening to Bigger Pockets mostly, BRRRR was like the hot topic. Yeah. And so we were like, oh, we're all in on that. Let's do that. And it ended up working out really good. Like, I know they talk about it now, like it doesn't work quite as good. There's still some people that are really successful at doing the BRRRR strategy. But when we got on, we like we said, we bought it with 35 cash, put about $20,000 into it, and then it appraised for $80,000 when we refinanced. And so we got $60,000 back, and that was the perfect BRRRR, if you want to call it that, because you got all your money back and a little bit more.
Yeah, that is a perfect BRRRR. I mean, that's a cool story. This is pretty cool, because there's not that many people that I know that have a good experience in a BRRRR world. Not, I mean, not experience, but like a perfect BRRRR on their first go.
Yeah. It got a little less perfect a couple months into it, just because like we did technically made $5,000 when we refinanced it, but then we did the rehab in winter. So then when the tenant, when like summer came around, the tenant was trying to use the AC and she's like, it's not working. I asked the contractor to go buy the house, and he's like, yeah, she didn't take the cover off it. So I'm like, she didn't take the cover off, easy fix. So she takes the cover off and the thing like looked like it had melted. Like,
oh no.
But we never looked at it because, you know, first house and whatever. So that was like $2,800. And then we had like some problems with bats and squirrels. So all said and done, I think we came out about $1,000 on top. So still a good BRRRR because we made money. But
yeah, and that wasn't the first deal that we looked at. We had put some earnest money down on a few other properties and didn't end up purchasing them and lost our earnest money. So I know people don't usually talk about the deals that don't work, but
I love those stories of deals that like go sideways, because I have a handful myself. We talked about this last week with a friend of mine. I was like, man, we walked away from some earnest money, and I've flown places and, you know, inspected some buildings. I'm like, yeah, I just can't close on it, you know, and that happens. Like that's kind of what I say is the cost of doing business. Occasionally walking away from earnest money, or ultimately you have to do the right thing for the project and for the property, you know, and if you have investors, especially, you have to do the right thing for them. So that's such a cool story. And I appreciate you kind of bringing up the fact that you had lost some earnest money and really took the time to find the right deal. So maybe let's fast forward a little bit. So you did the first one with your own money, kind of a BRRRR. That's super cool strategy. Then get your cash back out of it. Then what'd you guys do?
So after that first one went so good, we decided that we would do it again. And the second time did not go as good. So we bought a second one. And I mean, I don't know how much detail you want.
Might as well dive in. Yeah. I mean,
it was just a few miles or less, a mile away from the first one we got. So, I mean, first one we paid $35,000 for. We found this one for $22,000. As you can imagine, it needed a ton of work. And so we figured we'd skip the inspection, because we figured we're going to be doing everything anyway. And we fast forward a couple of years down the road, we realized that was a mistake. But I mean, that was kind of a nightmare. We used the same contractor, and he did a good job on our first house. So we assumed he'd do a good job on the second house. I ended up paying him all of the money before he had finished all of the work. And that was a huge learning lesson, because it was like pulling teeth to get him to do any sort of work. And I mean, to his credit, he ended up finishing, but it just took so much back and forth between us, like trying to find some way to motivate him to finish the job, which was extremely difficult to do. But then fast forward that, because we paid him way early and he didn't want to work, it took him actually 2 years to finish that job that was supposed to be done in 4 months or so.
Yeah. This is a great lesson. You know, you hear this a lot. It's like, do not pay the money. It's hard, because they'll be like, oh, I need it to buy blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, there's lots of reasons why they would kind of hound you for that cash. So I get it, but it's a great learning lesson. Just like, you know what, we'll pay you when it's done, you know, or hold back enough that it provides that incentive. Right. So appreciate the lesson.
And,
so,
I tend to trust people a little bit too much as well. Like he says he needs money. Okay. Like, here's the money.
That's how I do. It's hard, because, and the same goes for tenants, right? Like, right. I've had some bad tenants in the past, just fully trusting them, you know, and that's a lesson I had to learn as well.
we learned that one too. Thanks, Josh.
Hey, we had to learn it at some point. So I figured let's learn it early so we don't make that mistake with a lot more money.
So second one didn't go as well, but eventually sounds like maybe it finished out, right? Do you guys, so you guys have those two rentals. Do you still own them? And then let's continue forward. What happened after that?
Yeah, I can kind of take that. So we sold after a 2-year, what was supposed to be a burr turned into a 2-year flip. We just about broke even on that second house, but we did sell that in like June, I think, of this year, 2023. And then in the meantime, we bought a three property portfolio. It was a duplex, triplex, and a fourplex. And the same owner. So we were just like, hey, like let's put it in a reasonably low offer. I think it was like $50,000 under asking, and he accepted it right away. And then we were like, shoot, we should have offered less. But
that's always the challenge with that.
Yeah, I know. But that time we actually did get an inspection and kind of had an idea of what to do and had some plans for that. We planned on holding that long term. In the meantime, bought another fourplex. And then Josh and my wife Jen's cousin invests in he invests in mobile home parks. So he came across one in Wisconsin, and he doesn't invest in Wisconsin. So he kind of handed it off to us, and we looked at it, and this was in July of 2022, and it looked like a good deal. The owner was willing to carry like 20%. And so we ended up getting that with like a creative financing kind of deal and got it for about $800 out of pocket. Should have been a little more, but it's kind of fun. Our appraisal money, the check for the appraisal money, we didn't move the money around soon enough. So our check bounced. So they just built that into the loan. And we only came out of pocket $800,000.
Pretty good technique.
That's like really, I know, right? I know. So we're thinking about trying it on future deals.
Just write checks that bounce and then like, just roll in the loan.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Wow.
Yeah,
it's super interesting. I mean, I like the concept. So here's what I'm hearing is on the mobile home park, you had a first from probably a bank or something, I would guess, 80% of the value. And then the second, the owner carried the second note for the remaining 20%, so to speak. So you guys came out of pocket with basically zero money. I mean, in the realm of this, $800 is pretty much nothing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so how's that project going? So this was last June, you said?
July of 2022. We've had it for a little over a year. It's a 20 pad park. There were 18 pads when we moved in full, and we're still at 18. I guess we haven't really pushed too hard to fill the last two, but in the meantime, there was some room to raise rents. So after they're all on year leases. So after a year, we raised rents, had a couple people leave. We bought two of the homes, which maybe was a good idea, maybe not. One of them we were able to just sell as is to a guy that's going to fix it up, and you know, he's already paying us lot rent. And then the other one we're remodeling, and then we'll sell that. But yeah, it's doing pretty well. We got a good guy on site. He does our landscaping, snow removal, all that kind of stuff, and he's just kind of eyes and ears there in the park for us. So it's going pretty well.
Yeah, and I'll throw out some other information. Is to get this no money out of pocket, the bank was requiring a little bit more collateral. Mm-hmm. And so that nightmare flip that we spoke about earlier, they actually used that as collateral because we had all our own cash in that as well. So even though that was like one of the worst deals that we did, or it was the worst deal that we did, we were still able to use that to our advantage to buy this other property with no money out of pocket.
I don't want to ask this too strongly so you can avoid the question. Did you tell the bank you sold that property?
Yes. Yeah, we recollateralized. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, I don't want to get you in hot water, but that, like, I just want for the listeners, you know, if you have collateral on something and then you sell it, you should disclose that to your lender, right? And there's ways that people kind of move around lending in that sense. And so that's kind of a pitfall. So I don't want to like bust you guys, but I'm glad you guys. Well, I wouldn't expect otherwise. You get the point. It's a warning for people listening is, you can't use collateral and then sell it and not tell anybody. I just like to like throw it out there. But that's really cool. I mean, so you know what's funny is we've done some deals where we've done some extremely creative financing. And I think that's probably, you know, one is get into bigger deals like you're describing. Can I ask what you guys paid for the park?
Yeah, it was $600,000.
Okay, yeah. So like, you know, $600,000 deal, you start talking 20% down, that becomes a pretty big number, right? And you're like, oh gosh, how are we going to save that up? And all those questions. But if you can get creative, especially in today's market, sellers are much more willing to understand that either you need a blended rate, meaning they carry at a lower rate than market, or like you do what you're doing where you have a bank loan or some other loan is first, and then you have a seller carries a second. then all of a sudden your down payment gets pretty squished. You know, the challenge with that is debt service becomes pretty expensive. So you have to really understand the math, understand, okay, yeah, below NOIs, you got your debt service. Can the property still handle 100% financing? And then the final thing I'll say about that is when you finance something 100%, in my opinion, you need to be buying right, right? Like you have to buy in a way that, let's say the market falls and you don't want to be underwater. With your own money, it's a different story. Like we raise money from investors, so we probably wouldn't take that risk. But like if someone offered myself that deal, I'd be like, oh, all day. Like, let's go for it. If you think the park is valued higher than you're paying, or if you know a way to force value, like you guys did in raising lot rents, that's a pretty powerful tool. So really cool story. I'm like really, really glad you guys are sharing these tips.
Yeah, that one was cool too, because the collateral piece that he talked about, like we did have to switch it, but we actually switched it to the duplex that we bought from the same seller just in negotiating with him on the mobile home park. I think Josh was gone and he was going to a town and the guy's like, oh, I have a duplex in that town. And the duplex ended up being directly across the street from this 2-year flip we were doing. And we just kind of randomly asked him like, hey, do you want to sell it? And he was like, yeah, sure, I'll sell it. We kind of figured it was worth about 100. So we thought we'd ask, you know, offer like 80. And I said, well, how much do you want? He said 70. And I was like, would you take less for a cash offer? He's like, sure. We ended up buying the duplex for 57,000. And I think it was like worth whatever. And then fast forward, we're able to use that one as collateral when we sold the other one. So it just kind of all worked out. And it was cool because the park appraised for 760 on the day of closing. So it was.
Yeah. So to your point, you bought right in the park, right? The appraisal immediately shows you have equity. And the other lesson I like heard from this that I really want to highlight is ask the question. Like this is, I'm in a group, like in a mastermind, and the challenge this week of the mastermind is get rejected 7 times. So like at least once a day, ask a really ridiculous question that you actually want. Because they might say yes, right? But like getting used to that rejection. But anyway, I bring that back to what you were saying was you saw the duplex across the street. You're like, will you sell it? And then this is a negotiation tactic too. It's like always let them toss the first number. So those are really, really two amazing lessons. These are cool stories. I mean, I'm loving this. Like ask the question, will you sell it? You know? Yeah. So kudos to you.
And I'll speak to like the buying 100% leverage, because when somebody hears that, they're like, oh, that's a ton of risk. Like, that's ridiculous. Why would you put yourself in that position? But if you underwrite and you have a path to increase equity really fast right off the bat when you first buy the property, like that property now, like we talked about recollateralizing, but at this point, that property is not collateralized with anything else because the bank saw that we increased the value enough to eliminate the need for that. So if you have a path to increase the value a lot right off the bat, then in my mind, it's not any more risky than buying it 20% down.
Yeah. And also, I mean, there's a two part to that, right? And we kind of mentioned this as well, is if you're buying at a deal, if you're buying where you know the property's worth more. I mean, I have a story I tell where I bought a sixplex for $1 million and we put 30,000 down. So 97% leverage. And that's kind of the story I tell too, is look, I know it was worth 1.2 at the day I bought it. Also, there was an empty unit. So all I had to do was go in and put some flooring and, you know, some drywall and stuff. It really wasn't a hard project. And boom, I have a whole nother unit. So like within a month, we added a unit and I also knew I paid well for it, like paid under market for it. So I completely agree. And I'd like to like caution people. That's the reason we bring it up, is if you're overpaying just because it's no down, that's a pretty dangerous place to be. But if you have a path to add value, or if you're paying under the value, in my opinion, worth the risk. So yeah, great point, Josh.
I think also, like, I mean, obviously if you have the path to get there, but like, for example, the park we bought was locked in at, you know, he had just signed year leases right before we bought it, which, you know, obviously hurts, but it was like the cash flow was already cash flowing at that price, but had it been like a little tighter, I think that's something we've struggled with, is like underwriting for like, or like setting our criteria for properties when you put nothing out of pocket. Cause it's like, if you're getting it for no money down, but then you can increase the cash flow within like a year, even if you're like kind of close, as long as you're not going to go under and you have some reserves, it's like, I mean, it's still going to be a tremendously less than the 20% you'd have to put down. But it's all kind of like you said, like if it's your own private money, like obviously you can be a little more risky than if you're working with investors, but, just kind of whatever you're open to and you think you can handle and manage. So
yeah, I think a couple of things. I mean, everyone has a different risk tolerance, like you said. So if you're the type of person who doesn't mind taking the risk, and the other thing that you kind of breezed over, but I want to highlight, is reserves, right? Like you must have reserves. Just because you're coming with no money out of pocket to purchase, there has to be sort of the rainy day fund, right? Like if something goes bad, let's say in your mobile home park, let's say like five tenants moved out in the same month, which is unlikely, but it could happen. All of a sudden you need to have some reserves to help you pay for the things you need to pay for, most notably debt service. Yeah. So, you know, I like the use of that too. If you come with some reserves and you understand the way to force value, then I completely agree. Every investment's a risk. So if you have the ability to say, all right, maybe we're not going to cash flow year one. My partner Shane and I talk about this a lot, is we would take the risk of no cash flow personally year one. We don't do that with investors. We just can't. Not never, right? There's some deals that we say no cash flow year one because we're restabilizing. But generally speaking, we would want to be cash flowing day one for investors. But for us, to your point, if we found a deal with no money down and no cash flow for even a couple of years, but we knew that either we'd build a lot of equity or we could get there, totally cool with it. So I completely agree with what you guys are doing. So let's talk about the next step. So you guys have, sounds like a duplex, single family, mobile home park. Am I missing any? And then what's next?
Yeah, something like that. we've sold off a few of them because we just, the market went so high. We're like, it makes sense to sell some of these. And we did a couple of 1031 exchanges and into bigger properties. So something like that.
we actually kind of trimmed it up a little bit just because like that portfolio of three properties, we sold all of them. We sold the second single family home. And then the duplex that we bought from the first mobile home park owner, we seller financed to one of the tenants that was living in it. And that was kind of to do with the fact that it was an older duplex, not in the best shape. So we were just kind of like, hey, you know what? Like, let's get a decent price for this, you know, collect some money for a couple of years. Then we'll get a balloon. I think we set it up for 3 years with a balloon payment. So it was just kind of less headaches for us. And then since then, one of the properties we sold, we 1031 did to another mobile home park. So now we have two and we're under contract. We were supposed to close tomorrow on a third mobile home park, but the bank's lagging a little bit.
Yeah, some turnover issues in the credit department. So it's taken a lot longer than it should have.
Don't get me started on lending, man. My wife is always like, you have it out for lenders. And it's not always their fault. But man, I feel like it's always lending that's a holdup. And no matter how many times you ask, are we good to close? Are we good to close? Are we good to close? There's always something in the last 5 days. So I feel your pain completely there. So have you brought any investors in? Are you still doing it with all your own money? I hear the 1031, that's a good technique. Any investors involved with what you're doing now?
So I have a buddy I went to college with that's given us a couple hundred grand. And it's not tied to any property. It's just more just operating and it's a fixed rate. He had a lot of money, didn't know what to do with it. And I was like, hey, like I'll take it from you and give you an 8% return. And he's like, oh yeah, sounds good. It's better than the, you know, 1% I get in my savings account or less even.
Yeah, that's a cool deal. I mean, that's a good example of like, I talk about capital raising a lot and people ask the question like, you know, how do I convince them the returns are good, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know what? Returns are what they are and you're going to do your best. People invest in you, right? People are literally investing in you. So you need to have that story of we're showing success. Someone who knows you, Josh, from college is right. Like he's like, yep, you're a good guy. I trust you. I know you'll pay me back. You know, like having no lien on a loan at 8%, that's an incredible loan for you. And for your friend, he's like, sweet, man. I know that you'll do it. You'll do what you say and I get 8%. I have to think about it. So like it's a win-win, but at the end of the day, I want to highlight he's investing in you guys, not in the properties. In this case, 100% you guys, right? Like he doesn't even have a lien on anything. That's pretty cool. So that's a pretty powerful learning lesson. I feel like there's a lot of tips in this episode you guys are sharing. So thanks for that. And so where are you going to go now? You're closing on if the lender gets their stuff together soon on the third.
Yeah, almost been 90 days. So I don't know.
Oh man, we had one. They're different because it's multifamily, but we had one, they went 6 months in lending and we just kept extending and extending and extending. The seller was getting super frustrated. We're like, hands are tied here. Like this is just not our fault. Eventually closed it out, but it was a nightmare process. So hopefully that doesn't happen to you guys.
Well, the lender, he keeps saying, he's like, it's not a lendability. It's not a credibility issue. It's just a timing issue. And I was like, well, you've had plenty of time. Like it's got to be something.
I start getting mad. Like I'm a pretty mellow guy, but that makes me furious. I'm like, do whatever you got to do. Like I will come to your bank and I'll write the paperwork, whatever. Like, I don't care. Someone has to get this done. I don't know. There's like no urgency in lending, and that drives me nuts. Anyway, I won't get on that high horse. So where are you guys headed after this third one? Or is that going to be maybe a little pause for a bit, or what are you foreseeing?
Colin's doing all the deal flow, operations and deal flow, but our plan is to ramp it up. Colin, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we're focusing strictly on mobile home parks now. I think we definitely had the shiny object syndrome and chased so many different rabbits for the first 3 years. And I think it was good. I think we kind of needed to go through that because, you know, some people come in and you hear them and they're just like laser focused from the get-go. And I can't really relate to those people because I almost feel like I have to try a little bit of everything. So mobile home parks are what we're after now. So we've been strictly in the state of Wisconsin, the three we or two and a half, I'll say, we own are in Wisconsin. And
2.9.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And that's the way we structure that is pretty cool. I don't know if you want to get into that after Colin's here.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, let's let Colin finish that and then, I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, so expanding around the Midwest area, I've been looking in, you know, Iowa, Nebraska, some other areas. Pursuing mobile home parks. And then another kind of jump ahead is like we've got into podcasting. So that's taken up a decent amount of time. So it's kind of backed off on the real estate investing, but that we've broken it up where real estate investing is kind of my department and Josh can handle the podcast. So that's how we're balancing that.
Okay. Yeah. Let's hear about the structure. And we can, you know, like I'll give you guys a chance to pitch at the end, right? Like I want to hear about your podcast and how people can touch base with you. So I don't want to gloss over that, but just know we'll come back.
Yeah, no.
So the mobile home park, let's hear how you kind of guys structured that. Did you 1031 into that one?
No, not this one.
Okay.
No, so this came, so Colin's been working with a VA on cold calling different properties here. And he found like a list of mobile home parks in Wisconsin and called every single one of them. So this came up, Colin, you probably know more of the details here. I don't know if you want to talk about how we got the lead at least.
Yeah, well, actually, this was before we started using VAs, just cold calling. And I would always call
personal
and say,
cold calling.
Yeah, I just called and like asked if, you know, just asked if they had, I think I left a message for this guy and I just said I was interested in his mobile home park. But I think I was like leaving the messages, kind of making it sound more like I wanted to move there or move a home there so that the people would actually call me back. And so he called me back and, you know, the park I was calling on, he didn't want to sell. But again, like you kind of mentioned earlier, just like asking. So after he said no, I was just like, all right, well, is there anything else, any other parks you own or properties you might want to sell? And he was like, well, he owns five parks and they're mostly in the Green Bay area, but one of them was kind of farther away. And so he was having a harder time managing that one. He's like, I guess for the right price, I could sell that one. And that was back in February of this year. And that started this kind of ongoing negotiation process. And eventually we got to this deal structure that I think Josh can explain the deal structure pretty well.
Yeah. So we went back and forth a lot. I don't know how many times, but you know, he wanted a lot for it. And I was like, well, we can't really just pay that much right now. And this was when interest rates were on the rise or even already getting on the higher side. So the seller carry didn't work and we were trying to figure out a way that worked for him and that worked for us. And what we finally landed on is he's actually staying in as an equity partner in this deal. So he's keeping 25% of the equity. We're coming with $0 out of our own pocket and the bank is recognizing his equity as the down payment. Awesome. So we acquired this other one. And this one sale price was about $825. And yeah, another no money out of pocket deal. We're closing. Well, hopefully soon. Hopefully by the time this airs, we'll have closed on it.
Yeah,
another no money out of pocket. And we got the idea for keeping the seller in as an equity partner from my cousin who lives up in Canada and was doing a deal just like that. And I would have never even had the idea to even offer that if I hadn't been talking to other people that are doing other types of investing.
Yeah, that's a really cool tool. I love that as well. Like, and it's really cool the bank is recognizing it. They should, right? There's equity there. I think some banks are harder convinced that that's worth money, but obviously it is. So really, really cool technique for this seller. So is he going to be passive? Is he going to help you guys kind of transition into it? What's sort of the agreement as far as like who's doing the work?
So he's going to be a completely silent partner, but with the understanding that like he's owned this park for 10 years. If we need any help, we can just reach out, but he doesn't have any like voting rights or anything like that.
Well, I love it. Yeah, that's cool. We're again, a different deal, working on a deal structure similar where one of the investors actually is a huge portion of the ownership, but he doesn't want to be part of it, doesn't want any voting rights, any of that stuff. So, you know, it's kind of a dream investor, so to speak, in some people's case, just because they're like, we don't really want to, it's not that we don't want your opinion, but too many opinions too many cooks in the kitchen, right? So like, this is what we do for a living. Let us do the management and you can kind of just hang out as an investor. You own the majority of the deal, but we'll do all the management and all the work and all the decisions and stuff. And that's a pretty cool technique. So yeah, you guys have used it all. Owner carry, keeping the owner in his equity. I mean, this is pretty powerful. So really cool.
We'll see what works the best and let you guys know.
Yeah. What's next? Well, pretty soon you'll be bringing on more investors, but I want to predict the future for you. So I asked the question. So you have these ones and now you're ramping up. You got a VA doing some cold calling, that type of stuff, focused on mobile home parks in Midwest, we'll say, and starting a podcast. I mean, that's awesome. You guys are running. The question I wanted to ask is, how's work-life balance? I mean, anesthesiologist, nurse, sorry, I know there's some politics there. Seemingly, you guys still have some work going, right? Like, are you able to balance all that stuff and how's that going?
I would say without having a strong team and a partner that you can trust, it would be impossible. I'm working a little more than half time. I'm not quite full time anymore, because I do want to put a lot of effort and time into the podcast, into investing. But I am still in the hospital 26 weeks out of the year. But I will say, like, I'll speak to the team environment thing. Like, Colin's been doing a whole lot of heavy lifting on deal flow and operations. And my sister is a partner in our firm. I don't know what you want to call us. That sounds a little bit too official for us, but without the right team and people that you can trust, it would be impossible. So as long as you have somebody in the right area.
That's so good. This is another really incredible lesson. I will say, early on, I had a huge fear of this. And I talk about this on the show quite a bit. I had a fear of partnerships because, you know, we had some success just buying small multis, that sixplex that I was talking about. And we were kind of just cruising. And pretty soon, like, I was getting overwhelmed, right? But I thought that I had, like, the knowledge, I guess, and I was afraid to partner with people. Totally foolish. Looking back, like, it slowed me down, and you nailed on the head. Right people in the right seats and the right partners. That's incredible. And what's the saying? I always botch the saying. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. That's super true. It's like, you can go somewhere fast, right? Like, if you're doing it alone, you can make decisions, blah, blah, blah. But if you want to go far, it takes a team. And so I really, really love what you just said. Is really powerful to partner up with people you trust. And then you guys can divide and conquer and let it rip. So that's super cool. What about Absolutely. You, Colin? How's the balance for you?
Well, yeah, I've been out of the hospital for almost 2 years now. So I'm just, like I said, I manage the 35 unit apartment building I live in here in Los Angeles, and then the portfolio. So it all kind of pairs together pretty well. But as we're kind of going through this, I mean, people always talk about building out your systems and getting all that dialed in. And we definitely did not do that. And Josh's sister, my wife, is like, she's the one who's actually the organized one of the three of us. Like, Josh and I are kind of both like the visionary types, and like, let's go out and get the deals, and like, let's just do this. Like, we're not ready, but let's just do it anyways.
And figure then, it out later.
Yeah. But we never took like the steps to actually like, oh, okay, we need to like build these systems out. And so now we're going through all that. We're actually like trying to build a business. So for my wife and I, it's definitely been tough because, you know, we work from home and we have a 2-year-old. So it's like trying to balance that and trying to not have every dinner being just like talking about building the business, and like just separating that's really hard. But I'm very fortunate to not be working in the hospital still and being able to be home every morning and every night with my daughter and my wife. So it's been good. It's exciting, but I definitely do think the sooner you can dial in your systems and processes, the better.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I'm the same way, and it's hard to put the brakes on. It's hard to be like, all right, let's slow down and build a system for that. I'm the same as you guys. I'm like, I like chasing deals. I like finding that stuff. It's hard to kind of slow down and be like, oh, let's put a process in place. So we now kind of have those things, but it was the same thing. It came after the fact. It was like, oh my gosh, we have a lot here and nothing's fallen yet, but it could soon. So that was like the impetus for us. Like, okay, now we have to have a system. So I totally understand where you're coming from. And you're right. I mean, it's more, I would say the advice is accurate, is like, do it as soon as you can. Yeah. But sometimes it's also like, you just got to take action. You got to buy the deal, and you'll figure it out later, and you can, you know, the process will come when it comes. So that's kind of like a hard piece of advice to give to someone. Cause it's also like, if you're going so slow that all you're doing is building systems, you'll never get ahead, kind of. So it's a double-edged sword, I think, but I definitely appreciate the advice.
Yeah. I'd say like I guess build the processes while you're growing up.
Don't wait to start.
Yeah, spend some time in the processes. Like, don't let it slow you down, but definitely invest some time in that. And I think the other thing, like for us, like Josh was touching on the partnership thing. The big thing I think that, you know, because it hasn't been perfect the whole time, and you know, especially being that it's family, it's a little added tension sometimes. But communication has not always been our strength, and I think a lot of the issues that we have had have been tied to poor communication. So I'd say if you are going to partner, you just have to make sure you're communicating well. And like, you know, so many times, like we would assume things of each other and we'd be assuming the same thing. And it's just like, then we'd actually finally talk about it. It's like, oh, okay. Like it's really not that bad. Like we're on the same page. Weird.
Assumptions are always worse than reality.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Like one of my partners is my brother. And so it's great. Like we know each other intimately. We know each other's strengths, all that stuff. But we had to say, even before we started, was like, there's a line here. And if something needs to be said, it doesn't affect our relationship. It might sting, right? Like it might like hurt a little, but that's not personal. It's like, this is our business. So that communication thing is probably the key to everything, right? Is like, to your point, if you're not communicating it, someone's probably assuming worse than the reality. But, you know, more important is create some boundaries and then clear communication. So that's awesome. Well, guys, this has been an amazing show. I have a couple of questions for you. We're running out of time, so I'll ask just a handful. But I'll pick my favorites. What books are you reading? What books can you recommend? They don't have to be real estate. Any books at all. I like the question.
So I have these books up here. They look like they're really big books. I hate reading. So this is just fake over here. But I'm a big podcast guy, and I made it all the way through anesthesia school without reading a book. There's so much good information online and on YouTube and all this other stuff. I'm not a huge reader, but the last book I read was, I think, Five Steps Ahead or something like that. Oh, shoot. I can't remember the name of it. Rich Dad, Poor Dad. There you go.
Yep. Use that one. Throw it out there. That's a classic purple book that everyone gains from. It's like Bigger Pockets. You know, it's like if you haven't read that or you haven't listened to Bigger Pockets and you're starting out, that's where you go. So that's a good one. Colin, what about you?
I never read Rich Dad Poor Dad, but I felt like I did just because I listened to Bigger Pockets. But a book I'm reading right now it's actually the pastor of a church I go to here in LA. It's called Mind Shift. And even though it's written by a pastor, it's more about mindset and business than anything else. And it's been really awesome. So that's Mind Shift by Irwin. I think it's Irwin Raphael McManus.
Oh, so cool. Yeah, I love mindset stuff. I mean, that's the name of this podcast, obviously, but I'll throw one back in you guys, and I've actually never done this before. I'm reading a book called Life Worth Living, and it's written by three Christian like teachers at Yale, and they do this class. So it's not really Christian-based at all. They give the caveat that they are, and it's kind of that similar thing where it's like, don't write it off because of the faith or whatever of the person. The book is outstanding. So I'm glad that you guys gave a couple of really cool books. And I wanted to throw that one back out too. It's the same thing. It's a really good book. So cool. So I'll jump to the last question I always ask is, what is your guys' definition of success? And Colin, I'll let you go first.
I think for me, success is just, you know, everybody talks about time being the only fixed asset or commodity or whatever. And so for me, it's just having time with my friends and family. And that's ultimately like the goal of what I'm trying to do. Obviously, we want to make money, you know, buy a bunch of properties, but the end goal is to just have time with friends and family and work with them and help other people grow. I think for a long time I had a hard time, you know, like wanting to be really successful and make a bunch of money. But then when I started thinking about the fact that like, if I make more, I can also do more for others. And the bigger business I build, the more people I can bring into it. It really changes the way I think about things. And that kind of goes back to that Mind Shift book I was talking about. It's just like using the talents you have for others and looking at it that way. That would be success for me, is just building something that can change a lot of other people's lives.
Awesome. Yeah, that's super powerful. Josh, what about you?
I think that's a really difficult question. It's going to be different for everybody. But me, so I've been married for 10 years and I got three beautiful little girls. So success in my mind, and this is something that I heard Jordan Peterson say at one point, is that success is enjoying going home to a family that loves you. And so that's where I am right now.
Oh, so good, man.
A lot of people think it's just money, but really it's just enjoying your life and going home to a family that loves you.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, I like, it's so funny. You're right, Josh, that's why I like the question so much, is because everyone's answer is different. And that's why I love asking that one every single time, is to hear that perspective of other people. And I have had people on the podcast that just talk about, like, I want to be blah, blah, blah amount of money. And that's totally fine, right? Like, no judgment. But I think, in my opinion, it feels a little empty. I think more realistically would be, I always say, like, time with my family and, you know, enjoying the journey, like those things. We love to travel. So like those things bring more value to me than money. But here's the caveat, is money can buy those things, right? Money can buy some time back for me. So I will say they are tied to those things, but not necessarily my personal definition. But I completely agree with what you guys said. And that's really cool. I have two young boys. And so I like resonate with that a lot, is going home and actually like enjoying it, you know. And I won't say every moment's enjoyable. If you're a parent, you understand that. But, you know, generally speaking, it's like the best part of the day, you know? So really, really cool answers. Appreciate that. All right, guys. Final question is, where can people find out about you, and where can they listen to your podcast?
You go ahead, Josh.
I'll go first. All right. So my personal Instagram is at the lifestyle CRNA. I just started posting on there a little bit more. It's a work in progress, but it's a lot of fun at the same time. So that's where I do all my personal stuff. And then we have a website, investingrn.co. So that's where you'll find any information on our podcast. And that's we have a business Instagram also. It's the same as the investingrn.co.
Love it. All right, Colin, what about you?
Yeah, I'm on basically just on Instagram at Colin. It's with one L, C-O-L-I-N, from PDR, which is Playa del Rey, the town I live in. And I guess the only other thing would be just we have our real estate business is All Day Investments. And we have a website, alldayinvestments.co. We picked like popular names, I guess, so we couldn't get the .com.
That's all right. No one really cares about the .com anymore. It's always linked anyway. So
yeah,
that's what I think. Yeah. Well, cool, guys. This has been a cool show. I mean, I really, really appreciate all your, you know, transparency and honesty about, you know, everything, the way you guys are purchasing, the way you're putting it together. Really, really cool. I mean, you've done a lot of creative financing. And so to cover this all in one show is pretty cool. And I also just love you guys' personalities of being honest about your, you know, your definitions and those things. So thanks for spending the time. I appreciate you both for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, as promised, that was such a good show. So many strategies that we talked about there. So what I always say is, first of all, thank you for being here. But if you have any questions about any of that, don't hesitate to reach out. What does that look like for an owner to leave some equity in the deal as a down payment? What does it look like to ask a homeowner if they're willing to sell a different property? What are those, or nuance, right? What is equity versus, you know, debt? All of those questions, don't hesitate to reach out, because the goal of this is education and get people to understand it's a really powerful thing to build wealth. So thank you for being here. Don't hesitate to reach out, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Mindset Podcast. If you've enjoyed the content today, please follow this show wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to head over to wildoakcapital.com for more information or to connect with Eric directly. Please take a moment to leave a review or tell a friend about what you've listened to today. We hope you'll tune in again soon.